and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 268. I am your host, James Gilmore. Joining me is Peter Willington.
Hi.
And Keith Andrew.
Hello.
This is the day I put weird emphases on strange syllables.
For no- Andrew.
Andrew, yeah. You are Andrew. Yeah, that's exactly
I like it.
Right. Yeah, I like that too. Very nice, isn't it? You join us on the day where literally the entire console and mobile world is about to come crumbling down around our ears. Big Amazon news. Has done a thing and the world has changed. We're never going to be able to recover from it. Isn't that right?
Oh, that.
PS3, PS4, battle between the new next-gen consoles. It's all irrelevant. Doesn't matter anymore. It's been handled. Amazon has dealt the killing blow.
We should change our name just to Gamer then, really, shouldn't we?
Yeah, I know, because there's no point anymore. It's all one and the same thing. We must bow down to our mighty Amazonian overlords. All right. So we'll talk about that a bit. Why not? But updates first, shall we? Stealth Inc., A Clone in the Dark, is currently on sale for, it says on the story, 69p 99 cents, but in actuality it's on sale for 99p/99 cents. That weird.
Why are we lying to people?
Who are we employing at Pocket Gamer that writes these stories? Oh, Harry Slater.
Well, that's not the outrage for me, because he's just making the assumption that we all make, which is that that's the exchange rate. That's what it should be. But more and more now, we're getting this European thing. This is something they ruled in the European courts a while back, where they decided the pricing was going to be, let's stiff the Brits, where a 99 pence apparently translates to 99 cents. So we basically pay about 33% more than the Americans, which I think is a bit rubbish.
Do we get more game?
33% more game.
Yeah.
Nope. We just get screwed and left with a bitter taste in our mouths. Having said that, it is usually more expensive, this game, and it's actually really rather good. I reviewed this one for AppSpy, and we've obviously reviewed it a while back on Pocket Gamer. It's a platformer with a sort of stealth twist in which you have to sneak into the shadows and get past lots of objects. You're in a test subject trying to escape from a laboratory. We really liked it. It's a sort of great port of the PC game. It was originally available on Steam and that, where it had a different name. A slightly swearier name.
Ooh, it did.
It did. And it was changed from Stealth Bastard to, which we can say. That's not a real swear.
It's on Vita as well. Am I imagining that?
Yeah, yes, no, it's on Vita too. That's right. Mm. But it got changed to Stealth Inc., A Clone in the Dark. So it's punny instead of sweary.
You bastard.
I know, exactly right. Even so, it's cheap now, a bit cheaper if you're in the US.
But you
can grab that now if you want to. It's quite good fun. Second week on the trot in Windows Phone news.
What is happening
to
this podcast?
Can we have a special jingle for that? Can we have a special noise?
Windows Phone news. Yeah, it should have its own little... He'll have to dust it off every couple of months when something happens on there. Well, Halo, Spartan Assault, you know that game that Windows has?
Yeah.
I know that game.
You know the game. That game they have there.
I'll tell you. That is a good game.
So I hear. Well, actually, when it got reviewed by PC Games Publications, they thought it was poor, yes.
Well, the reason they hated it, because it wasn't a bloody PC game. That was like, It's like reviewing a spanner as a toilet and saying, well, I peed on it and it went everywhere.
That is exactly what it's like.
Like that, Keith. It's like reviewing Angry Birds for the pee. That's a better example.
No, my analogy involved urine. I think I win.
Well done, you. Well, it is also on sale. It's going to cost you £1.49 on Windows Phone and Windows 8 if you happen to be running those RT tablet Surface things. If you were one of the couple of people who bought them,
this is interesting that they would do this week, because I don't know if you know, when this launched, it was one of the few apps that if you bought it on one, if you owned the other, you automatically got it. And then that's been quite limited up until now, but Microsoft this week announced at their Build conference in San Francisco that now that apps are becoming universal, so you'll be able to write one app that runs on Xbox One, on Windows 8, and on Windows Phone. And then the idea is that, as well as it making it easier for developers, they'll also be able to make it so that you buy one and you get it on all three.
I see.
So this is going to be a theme. You know, this is the direction.
Very good. All right, then. Well, it's usually about £4.99. It's a top-down strategy game, in case you were thinking it was a first-person shooter. Obviously, it's not. It's set between Halo 3 and Halo 4. It's got a story, but, you know, who cares?
It's VR missions is what it is. It's like a Metal Gear. It's like it's fictitious. Well, no, it's real missions that they've turned into VR between the two games that you then learn to play, which is a very clever way of teaching someone how to play a game without it being a tutorial. It just kind of leads you in. It's very it's very slick.
Well, there you go, and you can get it cheap now. So £1.49, that's available from the Windows Phone Store or the Windows Store if you have access to either of those. Finally, there is a brand new episode for Tiny Thief, that cute little point and click puzzle adventure thing that we really liked, again, because it was just like charming and minimalistic and really rather nice. It's called Bewitched. And apparently you'll be waving a wand around instead of your finger, because it's about witches and magic and all that sort of stuff. You can download the game still. I can't remember how much it costs. Probably
it's free on Android and on iTunes. It is also free.
Free on iTunes too, okay. But the DLC will cost you. This is £1.49 or $1.99.
Not based on the pop band or the TV show from the 60s, is it?
I think we're going to have to put more research into that to find out, but...
I didn't expect you to take me seriously on either.
I would buy it if Samantha popped up and, you know, twitched a little nose every so often. And
oh, I love
happened.
That show.
It was so wonderfully quaint. And
I'm glad I'm not the only one who liked that show, because I thought that was a gay thing. Well, so you like it as well.
Yeah,
so.
But I like a lot of things gay people like, so don't worry about that. I'm a very confused young man. no, it was great. It's really kind of, it's backward in some sense, because it's still got the guy going to work every day and coming home and, hi, honey, where's my dinner? Only there's this slight twist in it, because the power play is she's actually more powerful.
She's wearing
than,
the trousers.
Yeah, than any of them. So it's quite sort of subversive and but also cute and quaint. And no, it's a really good show.
Is that the one where she wiggles her nose and then things happen?
Do you know, Peter, it is.
It really is, because noses are far more powerful than wands. That's why in the Harry Potter series, they went into that shop and they said, and then a whole rack of noses, and you had to choose your nose, because the nose chooses you, Peter.
No. The nose chooses you.
Oh, there it is. News. Hands up, who's got a PS4?
Me. That's me. I've got my hands up.
You're well, smug. You had one for a bit, didn't you?
I had one for a bit. I've still got my Xbox One, but I don't have the PS4 anymore.
Are you going to have to give the Xbox One back as well?
Supposedly. I'm hoping they forget.
All right, very nice. Both of you, with your respective consoles there, throw them away, out the window right now. You've wasted all your money. No need to have either of those things now. I'm not going to buy one, obviously, because a new challenger has emerged, which is clearly going to sweep the boards. Amazon unveiled the Fire TV micro console today.
Cool.
Yeah, I know, right? It's totally a proper games machine. Totally.
That's all right, then.
Yeah, I thought so. So what could it do? Why should you get rid of your amazing next-gen consoles? Well, it's powered by a quad-core CPU. It's got a graphics processor as well, a dedicated one. A couple of gigs of RAM. Can do your music and photos and everything like that to your big screen. And obviously, it's got games as well. Amazon's turned around. They've gone, yeah, games. We're going to hire some proper games designers. They've got Kim Swift, who's the lassie behind Portal, one of my favourite games of all time. And I think they've also grabbed someone from, used to work on the Uncharted games as well. Some dude whose name escapes me. Yeah, this is their thing. And people have been saying, is this a major challenger to consoles? Is this what Amazon's trying to do? Are they moving in on console territory? And the answer is, of course, no!
That is one opinion.
No, that is the opinion.
That is one opinion.
All right, okay. So let's workshop this then, guys. So it's basically Apple TV, but run by Amazon. And it's basically another little box that gives you access to the movies, Amazon's, you know, on-demand TV service, probably Netflix, probably Google Play, all that sort of stuff. And it also happens to be able to play games a bit if you want it to. Not really. That's sort of what it is. Because people, at the beginning of the day, that's the reaction that people were having. Were like, people go, oh, Amazon's trying to muscle in on the games thing. It's got its own console. It's a micro console. And then they were making fun of it and go, oh, this is a crap little piece of, it's a box. It's barely an Ouya. But, you know, it's got an Amazon label on it. Who cares? Since that's happened, Amazon has since spoken up and said, it's totally not a games console, you guys. They clarified in an interview that they're totally not going after. So it's not trying to be a console, but we do think there's a great opportunity there in between a console and a smartphone for fun quality games.
Yeah.
The line, I didn't actually watch the unveiling, but I was watching the unveiling via Twitter, if you know what I mean. And people were pulling out all kinds of quotes, and they were talking about how there is so much desire from people to play the games that they're currently restricted to on tablets on their television, which I don't know if this desire really. And I think if there was a desire, then Ouya has kind of conclusively proved it's not that much of a desire. But yeah. I mean, we've had this conversation about Apple TV several times on this podcast over the years, and not even joking, over the years, because everyone has been waiting. When are they going to add games to it in the same form that this has got them?
And
they've got the support for control pads, and you're thinking, right, okay, when's it coming then? You know, they're obviously they're gearing up iOS developers to get used to making things for control pads. When's it going to come? But like time and time and again, you go to any conference and you listen to developers talk about control and why they choose to make things on touchscreens and mobile. It's because they want to get away from the controller, and apart from in cases like Gameloft or whatever, 99% of those games, certainly the successful ones, are for touch, and to take that step and to accommodate them in some way with a controller is not adding anything to the game. You're compromising in order to get it onto a television.
And the same way as you compromise when you pull console games onto a touchscreen.
Exactly. And this is why it hasn't happened yet. I mean, this is going to be the only reason that it hasn't happened yet. But Amazon has kind of gone, right, okay, numbers matter. So we've got 100 games to launch, and we'll convince all our Amazon friends who are already on, you know, the Amazon Kindle Fire to bring their games over. And it doesn't really matter if they're any good or not. If we can say to people, oh, and you'll be able to play 200 games as well.
It's another little bullet point you can put on the sales
thing. And it's neither one thing nor the other. So they're not leading with it as a games thing. It's a very small section, actually, when you go to the site to look at, to buy one. It's just a kind of a feature, which is fair enough. But if it's a feature, then if you're a developer, why would you want to risk... minimal work if you're already on Android or specifically on Kindle Fire, I guess, but to risk changing it so that it works with controller, to be put on a store that is just a sideline of something which is essentially a vehicle for TV and movies. It's just...
Nasty looking controller too.
Oh, it's awful. And when that leaked the other week, you just thought that has to be a joke. It's like something for the Jaguar or something. It's like, what is that?
The first OnLive controller, because it's got that play and fast forward buttons. Only worse. It looks even worse than that one.
It's horrible. And all these companies, they just all grow for the sake of growing now. It's like, what else can we do?
Well, they have to do everything. They have to encompass all possible aspects. And that's what these boxes are for. You've got indiscriminate black boxes, little nondescript things, and what Apple TV should be and will be. And even though Ouya was aimed at games, it was still able to stream movies. And more recently, that Chrome dongle that you can whack in the side of your TV.
Chromecast.
They all do the same thing, where it's a box that gives you access to a bunch of services provided by that company, multimedia services.
Even Sky have their what's it called, Now TV, which kind of distills their stuff down to a £99 purchase. You know, obviously people in America know what I'm talking about.
That's what they're all trying to do. So they act as a little portal, basically, to their larger company. And with Amazon being as massive as it is, and the thing that Amazon is it's a portal to things. It's not a content creator.
No.
It's a shop front. Yeah, but is it going to be really, though?
Because it's hired a whole bunch of people and it's got a big game studio and they're making a bunch of games.
All right, then. Well, you had a slightly more positive look at this. I don't think this is negative, right? I just think the reaction was funny because people got all like, this isn't really a console laugh. But I honestly think they were pitching it as that. That's not what it was supposed to be. It could do games as well, but not really. But what do you think of Kim Swift going over there?
So here's the thing, right? Like, my PlayStation 4, it's an investment, I suppose, to play games, and I know I'll be wanting to do it in the future, and that is what it will do. It's also a device to play Netflix on. And in fact, at the moment, Netflix is getting more action than
That's
any
what
of the other games.
My PS3 does, yeah.
Yeah. So you wouldn't buy a PlayStation to get Netflix. You wouldn't get a 360 to get Netflix or an Xbox One or whatever it is. Equally, you're not going to buy this device, an Amazon Fire TV, to play video games on. That's not the reason that you get it. It's you get it because if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, and Amazon are pushing this really hard at the moment, then you know that you get what used to be called Love Film. I think it's called Amazon Streaming Video or something like that.
Yeah.
You get that for free, and it means that you get all of the content that you want, and you've essentially got something like Netflix. And even if you don't have that, if you are a Netflix subscriber, which a whole bunch of people are, then you can use that through this thing as well. So the reason that people are going to buy it is because they don't want to keep having to hook their laptop up or their tablet or whatever it is that they usually use Netflix on. They don't want to have to do that. They want this small little black box that they can put, hide away somewhere, and stream all of the digital content that they want instead of having to get their laptop out all the time or doing it on a touchscreen or wherever it is, and they want to share all these experiences. So, yeah, initially, this isn't a console thing. However, as soon as you get that market penetration of a device that is in so many different homes because it's been sort of snuck in as a media device, at that point, you have a huge audience. You have a massive install base. And whether, you know, whether or not, and I'm not 100% sure on how the actual controls and so forth actually work, but if they end up in a situation where they're just kind of giving these controls away or they're giving them out on the cheap, and I believe actually there's a bundle
They're $40 or something. They have to pay $40 and you get £10 like credit or something.
And
with
you
it.
Get a free game as well. So there's going to be a real incentive to actually go out and buy these things. And suddenly you've got a controller and you're like, oh yeah, I did actually quite like The Last Asphalt, and I did like Riptide, and well, I don't really want to buy a console, but I don't mind re-downloading the games I've already bought on Google Play and the Amazon store. I don't mind re-downloading those, so I guess I'll just kind of put them on the big screen. And then suddenly you've got somebody who's using that device as a games console. And Keith, I think you're initially right about the people aren't going to take a risk to make a game that's specific to this thing, and that is the reason that Amazon has specifically made its own game studio to go ahead and make specific content for this. However, most developers still lead on iOS. And now that iOS has this controller support built in, and it's just something that you can implement into your game. So if you do want to make a game with controller support, it's just an instant thing. And because Android has always had access to controllers, so the port over is much simpler, actually it's not that much more effort to take a game that is built for, you know, either, you know, very simple touchscreen interface or something slightly more complicated with the controller. It's not much more effort to then just go, well, I guess we can just put it on that store again and push it out to a home console. So I'm imagining you're playing your version of Grand Theft Auto San Andreas on your Nexus, and you're playing that on the bus and you're enjoying that, and it's okay. But, you know, that game you want to play with the controller, and you save it, it syncs off to the cloud or whatever, you boot up your television, and you continue on with Grand Theft Auto. Like, and that ultimately is a Grand Theft Auto game on your big TV. And if you're interested in the, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5, or if you're interested in the big Halo games or the big franchises or whatever, you're probably the sort of person that hasn't bought this device anyway because you already have a device to stream all of the content. So,
which makes it pointless.
This is the vision that all of these players have had for the last 2 years. And, you know, we're talking about Microsoft at the beginning, how the apps are now universal. And that's the exact same idea, that you buy Halo Spartan Assault on one and you play it on the others as well. The problem that they all are encountering, and why I'm still convinced Apple hasn't thrown its hat in the ring yet, is because the games that do that aren't suitable for all three. There are few games that will work on television, work on tablet, work on PC, work on mobile in the same way. You're always going to be thinking, you know, if it's Grand Theft Auto, you'll always be thinking, I prefer to play this on the telly, really, so I'll wait until I get home. And okay. Vice versa, if you're playing Angry Birds, you're going to be thinking, well, actually, no, this would be better on my tablet or my phone, so I won't really want to play that on a big TV. There isn't really... The grand vision is that all content, you know, not just games, but movies, music, everything, whether you're Amazon or Google or Microsoft or Apple or any of these other people come in, you do it all through them, and it goes to your television and it goes to your PC and it goes to your phone. But games are different because there are so many few games that you would want to play on a phone that you would also want to play on a console. They're just
television series, I would say, work much better in that regard. Yeah. Like, you can watch them on everything. Films, you want on a big TV, really, but people still do watch them on their little tablets and stuff. Yeah. There's still a big market for that. But, you know, ideally you want it on TV. But I agree, games don't function the same way on all three platforms.
I disagree because some of the biggest franchises are franchises that work perfectly well on both. Like, for example, Minecraft Pocket Edition. I would be more than happy to play that on both.
Well, yeah, no, but
The Walking Dead. I'd be more than happy to play that on both.
Those games have already made that leap. You know, you get Minecraft on your console. You get Walking Dead on your console, and you know that isn't anything new. No one's going to think, how can I now play Minecraft on my television? I must buy this.
But you're thinking about this from a person who has a history of and still likes to dabble in hardcore video games.
But Minecraft Pocket Edition is quite different from Minecraft the game. If you're going to be Minecraft Pocket Edition onto your TV, you're going to be playing essentially a gimped version of the full Minecraft when you should just be playing Minecraft.
But again, guys, we're not seeing this from the perspective of the people who are actually going to buy this. This isn't for... If you guys saw that sizzle reel, the people that are playing this are beautiful, lovely, very middle-class white people. It's not the people that are sort of like either super hardcore gamers or people who don't have access to £300 or £400 to, you know, get all this sort of stuff.
If we're saying that this is aimed at casual gamers.
This isn't for us, basically.
Yeah, so if you're saying this is aimed at casual gamers, the two biggest franchises by absolute mile are Clash of Clans and Candy Crush. Now, neither of those is going to be at its premium on a television.
And even if they are to
play them on your television, most of the people who play those games will actually be playing them while they're watching the television. They'll be on their phone or their tablet and they'll be watching EastEnders in the background while playing these things. That's one of their huge appeals, that you don't have to dedicate yourself to them. You tap into them when you want and you can be doing other things. They're not going to think, okay, I'm going to turn my television off now, essentially, and put it on my television so that I'm solely focused on playing a Candy Crush level, which I'm only going to be on for a few levels.
Who do you think is buying Minecraft and The Walking Dead and NBA 2K14 and all of the sports games? And like, who do you think is actually buying all these things? And Asphalt and Gameloft, all of Gameloft's games. Like, these aren't core gamers. Like,
I would say most of those are mid-core. They're mid-core, yeah. Mid-core is still quite core. None of those franchises are... Like, we all get wrapped up in these franchises. What's perverse about what you're saying, Peter, is that the franchises you're pulling on there are actually kind of franchises that only really mid-core or core gamers know of. Like, my mum is a casual gamer. She is massively into casual games. She plays way more games than I do. She's all never heard of Asphalt. She's not heard of the Walking Dead. So she's not going to think, oh my God, they're on that Amazon thing, I must play that. All of these companies are trying to do the same thing. And the problem that Amazon has is that it's games, and they're not even selling it as that. It's just a tag on.
It's not an afterthought.
Yeah, it's not a compelling reason to get this. And what's also equally bizarre about all these systems is that they all have Netflix. They all have Love Film. They all have Hulu. They all have all of these rival things. So there isn't really any reason to get this one over... because none of them can afford to tie their services to one.
The install base you're talking about, getting up this massive install base for this device, I don't think it's going to happen.
Most of us, even
the most kind of casual person or non-tech savvy person probably has at least two devices which can already access all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's not for the audience that you think of it. Like, it's not for a gamer audience.
I'm saying even the most casual. My mum has two devices that can access this. Seriously.
What, on her television?
Yeah, on her TV. You got a Virgin cable box. There's a Netflix app on the Virgin cable box. Okay. There's an iPlayer app on the Virgin cable box. She's got... Mm. We happen to have a smart TV. They do. I don't. So you've got all the apps there again. She's got an iPad. Got all the apps there again. You've got three devices that can access all this stuff already. Why would you buy this as well?
Because Amazon's selling point with this is that it will be sold on Amazon. And that is the one key strength it's got. They will push this front and center on the website, which is the biggest, you know, most used in the West retailing site. That will be what accounts for a portion of its sales and the price point. But other than that, there isn't anything that this does that can't already be done. So
it's fine, absolutely. But Like, that's not necessarily the point. As long as Amazon can get this into the right people's hands, and they absolutely can. Like, that Kindle Fire, you look at that piece of tech and you just go, why would anybody buy this? And it's a success. It's a relative success. Like, sort of relatively moderate success, but it's still a success.
No, it's Kindle Fire's been,
You guys are completely right. Like, why would you get this over any other? The answer is because you haven't got any of those other things already.
But like, I think you can't buy a television now without it being smart.
Exactly. That person doesn't exist who has none of these things, because if you've got a phone, you've got it. If you've got a TV or any link, a TV which can play any kind of television, i.e. any kind of cable TV or even any kind of preview TV, they have apps on them now. So there is no person who can't access this stuff already. If you've got a TV, you can get to Netflix.
It's a logical move, but it isn't reinventing the wheel. It's not going to get a massive install base. And for developers to treat it seriously, and even if they're making casual games, to make something that is perfect for this format, they're not going to do it. They're going to port over any games they've already got on Amazon, and they are essentially games that are already on Google Play.
I agree with you on that. I don't think there'll be a whole bunch of people making games
and that's what the fundamental problem is with all of these things, about this whole dream that everyone had like 2 years ago, that we would be able to take all these mobile games and we would be able to put them on our television and instantly there'd be another revenue source for all these developers. It hasn't worked because everyone suddenly discovered that 99% of mobile games do not work on a television. They're fundamentally, not just in the way you control them, just that, like I was saying, people don't want Candy Crush on their television because they wouldn't be able to do anything else. They want to play Candy Crush while they're watching something. This is what these games are brilliant at. They fit into your life. They don't dominate them in the way that if you were playing The Last of Us or Halo or something, where you actually genuinely want to give all of your attention to it. And the idea that you can take mobile games that fit in that way and put them on your television so you can't do anything else. I mean, you'll get to the perverse stage where you're watching EastEnders on iPlayer on your tablet so you can play Candy Crush on your TV. I mean, this is not...
And also, if you're playing Clash of Clans, you're going to be playing it for about 5-10 minutes. Yeah, and you change turning it off again, then turning it on again half an hour later.
Absolutely,
that's not gonna
absolutely
work.
But those aren't the games that they're putting forward as very good examples.
That then is the other problem, in that if you're aiming this at a casual audience, those are the games you've got to put forward. Because if you're saying to a casual audience, come and play Asphalt, they're going to say, well, why would I want to play that? I'm not really into racing games, actually. It's just a tag on, and no developer is going to treat this seriously. There will be people who port over. The bigger companies will. Game Off will be on it, I bet. But all the other developers who they're not going to think that this is any way changing the game. It's just another device that does all the things that all the other devices already do.
They'll be on board because they want to affiliate themselves directly with Amazon, and that's smart, and you do want to say you're on board. And EA have already said they're there, and I think Disney's saying yes.
Yeah, all the big ones.
Obviously, Game Love. They've all said, yeah, of course, because it's Amazon, and obviously you want to buddy up with them, and it makes good sense. Will it succeed as a gaming platform? No, of course it won't.
No, agreed.
But, like, and even, I'm not even sure if the huge install base will be there, because like I say, everyone can already access this stuff already. And if you really don't have it and you wanted to get to a few things, then that little Chrome dongle is actually quite smart, because it's like $30 or something, and you just bam it inside of your TV and you can get to everything. Very nice. So it's out right now, isn't it? Didn't they just like flash launch it and you can order it immediately?
It's only available in America, I believe.
So I think you can import it. Some people have already got excited and wanted to import it.
What I don't understand is, why have they killed Love Film? I thought it was a really good brand, and now it's not Amazon Prime Plus or whatever.
That's what it's called now. They did kill that brand, which is a bit strange. But I suppose it was... I guess it's a side issue, obviously, but Love Film suggests it's film, but it is TV now
That's true. I used to be a Love Film guy.
Me too.
Because
I used to
rent the games from there, and then they stopped actual rentals. Mm. So it became just streaming. And when you pared it down to just streaming... Netflix wins. Netflix is a superior service. It's got more choice. And so I switched. So they lost me. Bit of a shame.
Do you know, just to round this conversation off, I would really love, I genuinely would love one of these. Because I've not used an Ouya. I nearly bought one the other day because it was going for 15 quid in game.
That's tragic.
And I just thought, do you know what? That would be a really good way to end 1964 games. But no, I thought to myself, like, the other day, like, I would genuinely like one of these. Just kind of give it a go, because you might be completely right, and I'm terrible at business, and obviously, you know, Keith, I bow down to your sort of expertise.
Everybody does.
I know, but you know, I genuinely do feel like there is some sort of a gap in the market. Like, I do feel a bit wasteful when I've turned my PlayStation 4 on and I'm just using it for Netflix. You know,
well, you see,
and I would genuinely
love to play Asphalt 8 again on a big TV, because I did that at MWC and it was brilliant.
But without any sense of humour here, this is what the Xbox One is meant to do. The yeah. whole thing of snapping things, and it yeah. it works. It's just in case if you're inclined to do it or not. I've not, you know, I did it to see if it worked, and it does, but I'm not inclined, because there's nothing on Xbox One's library where I really want to be watching television at the same time. But, you know, that is the argument for it. If you have games that where you don't have to give them your entire attention, you can still watch something in the background, then that is what that's for. You know, that is why they did that, whether
it's
or not...
the multitasking media service, whereas the PlayStation 4 is the games machine. That's
for
how they've tried to frame
and
it.
Premiership footballers. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, you can buy this Amazon Fire thing right now. It's $99, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
And if you cough up an extra $40, you can get a controller with a £10 thing and a free game to go with it.
They're charging for that controller.
Yeah, I know. So it just looks horrible. Either way, you can get hold of them right now if you're in America. We'll find out when it comes out in the UK, and obviously we'll give you a heads up on the site as well, because Android players might be interested. Seeing as we spent so long on that, we'll rattle very quickly through the rest of the news. A quick heads up, we were going to do it in the new releases, but it's not technically out everywhere. So Hearthstone Heroes of Warcraft is out in soft launch. So if you happen to be in New Zealand or Australia or Canada, you can get hold of the game on your iPad at the moment, not your iPhone. The iPhone version is coming, but they're just starting out purely tablet-based and purely in those locations at the moment. If you haven't cottoned onto it yet, it's a CCG, collectible card game, based in the Warcraft universe. The beta came out on PC last month, a couple of weeks back. People have been playing it for a while, and it's all been very positive, actually. I've heard lots of good clucking about this. Peter, you're a card game man. Have you had a go yet?
I have not had a go yet. I would very much like to, but I'm not. I don't have an iPad.
I know. Well, you should have a look at the PC, because I know that early beta access is around. And I'm going to start playing it over the weekend. I'm not really a card game guy, but I need to play it for the site, and I'm curious to see what they've done with it. Because, as I say, lots of positive noises from people at first. You can download it, I think, for free. I think it's a free-to-play game, as are all the CCGs, really. And as soon as we know when that's coming out in the UK, we'll do it in the proper out and about section.
What does a positive noise sound like?
Sound like
that's okay.
Like that, you see.
I'll see.
Don't you feel better now? I feel better now. Okay. And finally, you know the Anomaly series, that Tower Offense.
That Tower Offense element of it was just really...
It was
really
unique, wasn't it?
It was really unique. Changed it from... Because that was when Tower Defense was getting really boring and stale. So is there a new one, or is there...
That game that shook up the Tower Defense genre by turning it on its head, making it Tower Offense, they've announced that the final game in the series is going to be a Tower Defense game.
I find defense hard to spell. Is it just me?
That's because there's two spellings. It's the C if you're in the UK and correct, and the S everywhere else.
Quite like the S.
A bit wrong and rude. So it's called Anomaly Defenders. It'll be technically the fourth entry in the series, because it goes Anomaly Warzone Earth, Anomaly Korea, Anomaly 2. Someone should talk to them about their numerical system. And now Anomaly Defenders. Release date yet.
Very pretty.
It is very pretty. All the games in the series are pretty. It's a beautiful series. It's the other thing that helps it stand out from the crowd. I reviewed the last game, and it's very good. I always find a little bit of apathy kicks in about three quarters of the way through these games, where it becomes a bit samey and a bit like, oh yeah, all right then. The production standards are through the roof. It's fantastic. But yeah, the thing that set it apart was the fact that you were attacking towers. You were leading your guys through a series of pathways and roads and being attacked by the towers. That was the novelty of it. Now you're going to play as the aliens, mounting your towers and building them up and upgrading and everything as the humans come in to attack you. So now it's going to be just a sort of standard tower defense game.
They've totally ripped it from those sections on Assassin's Creed 3. I mean, that's where they've taken it from.
That's where they pulled it from, yeah, no doubt. Alright, so there's a trailer up on the site right now. It does look beautiful. It's funny because they're saying it's the same conflict from a new perspective. That new perspective being the same perspective as all the other games that were out when you gave us an actual new perspective on that genre. So it's a bit about face, but I can understand why they're doing it, and you know, it will be fun to attack it from the other side. And you know what? I bet it'll be quite good as well.
So does everyone else spell offense with an S then?
Yes. Offense is with a C as well. Again, I think it's S if you're in America or somewhere else. No, it should be a C. C's all the way. That's what you're really fixating on here, isn't it?
I'm just thinking, you know, if I'm on a plane across the Atlantic, at which point do I have to start spelling it differently? That's...
When you pass that line in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. You know the one, the dotted white one that you can see if you look out your window.
I need them to make an announcement over the speakers.
Yes, we are now 6 hours away from New York.
May now start spelling defense with an S.
Welcome to New York. All right, then. So we don't have a release date, as I say. We'll let you know when it comes out. But Anomaly Defenders will be out in a bit.
Sounds like a cartoon, that, Defenders.
Power Rings combine. Out and about this week, we've got some crackers for you. Starting off with Monument Valley. I won't say too much because it's the game I'll be talking about later on in the podcast. Suffice to say, we think it's really rather good. It's a puzzle game to do with architecture and creating impossible pathways. It is, I think, £2.49 or $3.99. I think it's about that. I say I'll talk about it later. Monument Valley, stick with us. You want to hear about this game. Also out right now, Warhammer 40k Storm of Vengeance. Just one of the very many Warhammer games that are going to be appearing on the App Store over the next few months. I played this today. It didn't come out in time for us to do it on our App Spy Eye on the App Store live stream yesterday, which Peter and I do every Wednesday at 5 p.m. At twitch.tv.
You need to get out more. Honestly, you're playing too many games.
Oh, sorry, it's almost as if it's like our job or something.
Yeah, what a job like that would be.
No idea. So I've played it for about half an hour, and I am underwhelmed.
This looks boring.
So it's a lane defense game. So imagine if you're playing Plants vs. Zombies, but both sides are the zombies. So both sides are advancing slowly towards each other across about five tracks. There are towers at either end as well, and they act as more like Command and Conquer style resources, where you launch down pods that you can build more troops from, which you can then send out across the lane. And you also create like tanks and stuff like that, and a thing that creates redemption points, which is, if you're on the Dark Angels side, redemption points, which is how you pay for new troops. It's Dark Angels versus the Orcs, and it's a bit boring, I'll be honest. You can see the video on AppSpy, and there's probably a trailer up on Pocket Gamer too. It just looks a bit bland, and it feels ever so rigid. And the wonderful thing about 40K, if you liked it, those systems were commanding huge armies and pushing them where you want them to go and using all these tactics, and this pairs it right down to just another lane defense game that happens to have a 40K skin on it. It's £2.99 or $4.99, both iPhone and iPad.
What?
I know, right? It looks
I was just like, oh, okay, whatever, never mind. Maybe it's 69p. It's probably free to play. It's how much?
Yeah. And it's got in-app purchases. Yeah, I know,
no.
Right? That's a bad Games Workshop.
No Games Workshop license is worth that.
Ooh, harsh words indeed. Oh, I think Warhammer Quest was about £1.99 or something. So
okay,
that's quite good.
Sorry, I should have said no non-license from Games Workshop. Like, what's the appeal here?
I don't know.
Green Marines, like
the Green Marines. That's not what they're called, Peter, and you know it.
Yeah,
right. So yeah, you can get that now if you want to, but be warned. The big release that has come out is FTL, Faster Than Light. This is the very cult PC game that was a Kickstarter. I didn't realise it was, but it was. It gives you control over a spaceship, which you view from a top-down perspective and is cut in half in a sort of bisected so you can see all the rooms on the inside. And you jump from star to star, galaxy to galaxy, exploring, encountering alien species, and usually getting into laser fights with them. It's not an arcadey game, though. Very much not an arcadey game. It's all about managing your ship as if you were the captain on your very own Enterprise. So you've got your shields, and you've got your laser systems, and you've got your oxygen and camera system security, and you're constantly moving power between each section, and you're moving squad members into those rooms to repair if there's an attack going on, and then you're trying to do communication with alien species and attack their ship in specific places. It's quite intensive. We did play this on the stream yesterday, and I got murked within about 10 minutes. But I tell you what, it was fun doing it. Like, I felt under pressure, and like, oh my god, because it's happening in real time, it's not turn-based. And I really did feel like I was desperately trying to swap more power to the Shield's captain. And it was kind of fun. It gave you the feeling of being your own
Doesn't
Starship
that make you Scotty?
Yes, in that instance. But there are several members of your team. You could be all of them at once. But you can get it only for iPad. It blatantly wouldn't fit onto an iPhone. It would be a nightmare to try and put that interface onto that screen. So wisely, it's only on an iPad. We're going to have our AppSpy review up soon, and I'm sure the same with Pocket Gamer. We do have to play it for a bit. We're mainly interested to see
really?
How much... Well, yeah, it's not a game you can play for 10 minutes and go,
when
yeah.
When did we start playing games?
We did. You never did.
I just used to wait whoever bought me the nicest stuff. Then
the moment you get a Kindle Fire, then, you know, you'll start playing all those lovely games.
Oh, they will get turns. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they will. So, yeah, you can get this right now. It's $6.99. But that's another justification that it's the full PC gaming experience. And having compared them side by side, I've got it on PC as well. It's very similar. Like, there might be a couple of subtle changes here and there, which we'll elaborate on in the review. But it's not some, like, gimped version of it. It's the full game. And it's got the extra stuff they've included in the enhanced edition. So there's a new alien race, there's new weapons and new ships and everything. So it's a pretty good deal. But some people are already saying they're going to buy it again. People are that fanboy about this game. They love it so much.
People do. People love it. People love FTL.
They do. It's a proper culty game. And having played it for a bit, I'm beginning to see why. So yeah, $6.99, $9.99 FTL out right now. Also, an addendum to Joe Dever's Lone Wolf, which is an interactive adventure novel that also has 3D turn-based fighting systems in it. You saw this for the first time, I think, yesterday, didn't you, Peter?
I did indeed. I was... like,
your
really
stunned
surprised.
Reaction, yeah, when we started fighting.
This is a Bulky Picks joint, isn't it?
It is. But as soon as the Bulky Picks logo comes up and then goes away, it looks like it's weirdly out of place in this style of game. Because this is a very sort of serious, lots of cutscenes and not to say that Bulky Picks production values aren't high, it's just that I associate them with more cartoony stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas this is a very sort of serious-headed fantasy adventure, and it's all scrolls and old script writing down, and it looks bloody gorgeous. It's a really fantastic-looking game, and you choose your own adventure in the same way that you do with those Steve Jackson books from the 80s, and you can build up your character a little bit and choose your proficiencies and your specialities. Thing is, when you get to a fight, it suddenly goes all like modern Final Fantasy, and you're standing there in a full 3D rendered environment where before you were just looking at text and pages, and then you engage in a bunch of quick time events to do fights, which is, it looks impressive. I reviewed it. I wasn't as taken with it, though. I didn't think the story was as strong, and I thought it was a bit of a mismatch. Those two things didn't gel as well together as they could. The fighting system wasn't as fun to play. But certainly, production value is through the roof. And if you've already bought the first chapter, then you might as well carry on. So the chapter 2 is now out. It's called The Forest Hunt. You can buy it for £2.99 or $4.99. And if you haven't already downloaded the first episode, you can download it now for free. Another complicated mess, well, from my part anyway, I made a complicated mess of it, was UFHO2.
How do you pronounce that?
Yofutu. I've got no idea. I don't even know why it's called that. UFHO.
What's the H stand for?
I don't. Oh, hexagonal. Unidentified flying hexagonal objects, I'm going to guess, because it's a hex based game in which you have to guide your little alien dudes around these hexagonal rooms collecting gems, which sounds sort of easy, but when we booted it up, it was like, because each zone is a hexagon, and inside that hexagon, you have, I think, seven little zones, three around the perimeter and one in the center. And each of those you can twist around, and then each node you can twist around surrounding it, and it becomes like this bizarre interlocking puzzle which you're trying to navigate your little alien dude through. It's a turn-based game. You can play it with a bunch of different players. It's complicated, and it sells itself as being complicated. So I picked it up and just made a pig's ear of it all on the stream. But it might appeal to those who seek a slightly deeper board gamey experience. It'd be good for iPad players, I suspect. I think you can do it online as well, or do four players on a single tablet via local multiplayer. You can get it for £2.49 or $3.99. It'll be an acquired taste, but proper board game fans, maybe give that one a look. And finally, John Hare's new game is out.
He's got a nice ponytail.
He does. If you're not familiar with John Hare, he's the guy responsible for Sensible Software. He was part of that team, which produced games such as Sensible Soccer and Cannon Fodder, which were both bloody brilliant. Obviously, this was like 20 years ago, And in the meantime,
born.
I know exactly. And in the meantime, he's been knocking up a new game for iOS.
I wonder where you're going with that.
Yeah,
lawyers involved.
He's been working on this one for quite a few years.
He hasn't been solely doing this though.
Like, is this a side project or a one of his?
He's been consulting on games for years and years and years. He was working in East Europe for like about 4 years ago.
Right.
And then he was working at, I think he was working at Jagex at one point.
Oh, right. RuneScape, yeah.
And then he was working on... He's been busy, but kind of behind the scenes for a really long time. But it's weird, isn't it? Like, all of his games that are famous are like 15, 20 years ago.
Mm.
And
they're all of a very specific style as well. Mm. Both Cannon Fodder and Sensible Soccer, they all
Sensible
had the same
golf.
Yeah, the same style of little tiny characters, almost pixel arty.
Yeah.
This is nothing like that whatsoever. It's a word game, a puzzle type thing where you boot it up and it gives you a little clue. It might say, four-legged animal associated with Garfield, and you'd have the letters A, T, and C underneath, and you'd have to shuffle them around to spell lion.
That's a hard one. I'm glad you solved that.
I know, it's a toughie, isn't it? We played this again on the stream. You can actually see all this stuff as a catch-up video on the Apps by YouTube channel if you want to. It is a word game. I mean, it's kind of unremarkable. In fact, I don't want to be mean, but I mentioned this in the chat window that I don't even think we'd be talking about this if it wasn't John Hare.
No, I don't think we would.
Yeah, it's not that it's bad, because it's not. I've played it, and it's actually apparently got a lot of content. So, I mean, Rob's played it more than I have, and he said he felt the same way at the beginning, but the more you play through, the more stuff there is, and there's actually a lot in there, puzzle-wise.
The maps are interesting.
Yeah, so it's solving different word puzzles, and these words, once you've completed them, they sort of spell themselves out on a map, which joins up with a whole bunch of other words. So it looks like a kind of almost yellow brick road of words kind of travelling all over this giant map.
There only appears to be about 5 countries in Europe, which is...
Well, you know, like you said, he's had other things going on. You can't be expected to do all of them. Yeah. So it's available right now for free. I assume there's IAP stuff in there if you want to add
free?
To it, but... You can do it. It's one of these things. You'd mess about with it on, you know, on the bus or on a coach or something for work. Word game crossword fans. What's wrong with that?
What was that?
You did bus, and then you decided to mention a coach. Like, they're radically different experiences.
Well, they are. What? Coach is a long haul.
Yeah, coach is a long haul, and bus is a short journey.
On a bus or a coach? I think it's that time of the day.
I think you've lost it.
I think it's all this pollution. I think I've been infected by Siberian sand.
So what was I saying? Oh yeah, Word Explorer, out now. Go grab it, maybe.
Can I play it on a minibus?
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Right, here we are again. This is a chamber. There's some games in it. There's a throne. And yeah, we're busy. Let's motor on. Peter, what have you been playing today?
Sure, I've been playing Fez. Phil Fish, he's been described as has a... use of Twitter that is, quote, caustic, which I think is fantastic.
Good beard, though.
He's very good beard. He basically spent a whole bunch of years making this one game, highly detailed. Like, it was a project that he just fell in love with and was making it. And Indie Game the Movie is all about it in a lot of different ways. And I never played it until literally today. I played the Vita version. There's a new Vita port available. And it's very, very, very good.
Oh, it works, does it?
It does indeed. So let's just very, very quickly talk about the port for the people who have already played it. The port itself is fantastic. The controls work beautifully. Minimal load times. The game is smooth. The colours are vibrant, especially if you've got an original OLED Vita. Looks and sounds amazing. Brilliant. Go and grab it. It's fantastic. So if you don't know what the game is, you play as Gomez. He's a little small, white, furry, creature-y type person, and he lives in this 2D world, or at least he thinks he does, and very early on he finds out that actually, no, it's 3D, and you can change the world, basically, with a tap of the left or the right shoulder button. So with 2D games normally, you'll see things in a very flat perspective, but with Fez, you can move the entire world around, because actually, everything is a cube rather than a square. And so what this means is that you can A, get a different perspective on things, which is always very, very useful, and B, you can bring certain objects closer to you than they originally appear. So you'll be walking in an area and it looks like there's a massive ledge, but it's really far away. But with a quick tap of one of the shoulder buttons, the perspective changes and suddenly that ledge appears much closer. It's a perspective trick, basically. It's a trick of the eye, but it works. It appears to be this cutesy pixel art platformer and it's like, whatever. Like, you know, the kind that you've played a billion of, Cave Story and, I don't know, like the Spelunkies and that sort of thing. Not to kind of take away from any of those, but that style of game is getting slightly old now. Mm. And it presents itself as that, but actually it's much closer to something like a Metroidvania. It's an exploration game. It's a game about discovery. The game starts off with this discovery that the world isn't flat, it's actually cubed. And then just like from there, the discoveries keep on coming. You start to understand that you can grab these small little golden cubes, and if you get enough of them, it creates a bigger cube, and the bigger cube is used to unlock doorways that are blocked up. And then you start to find more hidden secrets. So there'll be a flash of light, there'll be a flash of lightning, and you'll see the silhouette of what looks like a humanoid creature, and you wander over to where it is, because it's invisible. You wander over to where it is and tap the circle button, and you start talking to it, and it's like you're talking to a ghost, maybe. And then you realise that actually the strange squiggles and writings on the wall actually have patterns to them, and you start to decode those patterns. Mm. And it's all about that exploration and the discovery. And the Vita version of it is absolutely perfect.
How much is it?
Really, really well. I think it's less than a tenner. I can't imagine it being much more than that. Mm. The one thing I do know is that it's not, as far as I can tell, it's got cross save, so you can take your PlayStation 3 save and start it again on Vita, but it's not cross buy, so you don't get both versions, which seems a little bit.
Mm. Mm. Well, he needs to make that money back, though, doesn't he? Badly.
Does he?
Well, Phil Fish, that game is never going to be profitable. He spent 5 years developing just that one game. It cost a ridiculous amount, and even with the success it's had, it's still not anywhere close to making its money back.
Is that true?
That's a thing.
Oh, right, okay, I didn't know that. But, I mean, the game is a success in terms of critical. Like,
it's a good game, absolutely.
It's a fantastic game. But and my review will be going up on Pocket Gamer probably in the next day or two.
Cool.
But yeah, it's definitely for the sort of people who enjoyed the mysterious elements of Castlevania Symphony of the Night, the hitting the wall and finding out there's something behind it, the getting more than 100%, say, like, completion rate. Mm. You know, that sort of a thing. It's for those people, and it's it's very good.
Cool. Excellent. Well, interestingly, the game that I'm going to talk about, Monument Valley, has sort of something in common with Fez. There's a little bit of a crossover there. It is a game released by Us2, which are the guys behind Whale Trail, which was the very pretty but not very successful Endless Runner. I didn't take much of a fondness to it because it was just another Endless Runner. I know you liked it. And you've also played this as well, haven't you, Keith? I think we share the same opinion, which is, it's lovely! Mm. It's bloody great. It's short, but it's marvellous. So, in a similar way to Fez, you're presented with a world which you can twist and turn and alter the perspective of in order to open up pathways to new areas. So that's the kind of crossover there. In the case of this game, rather than adjusting the camera, you're literally physically reaching in and twisting parts of the structure around. You're turning towers on their heads. You're moving entire buildings around at the base. You're flipping things sideways. You're doing all this mad collection of stuff in order to get your little white character, this little girl, onto the top of the tower. And once you got to the top, she pulls a little kind of square cube thing out of her head, and that's clearly building towards something at the end of the game. It's clearly inspired by Escher and the Escher scrolls, the lithographs that they've done, in which you have staircases going in all different directions that couldn't possibly mash up in reality. It makes no logical architectural sense, but it sort of works in the picture. It's an optical illusion. And you're literally creating these optical illusions in order to get the girl to the exit. So you'll, for example, twist platforms at the top of the screen that should not connect together, and then you'll swing this kind of V-block around, and suddenly you'll be joining up the top floor to the bottom floor, which shouldn't really work, but does because it's almost as if it suddenly gets twisted into a 2D plane at that point, a little bit, like we say, like Fez. You'll even get instances where suddenly you're walking along a platform and it twists sideways. As you're on it, you go boom, and suddenly you're standing on the wall, as if you're playing that Vita game that everyone got excited by. What was it called? Gravity?
Gravity Rush.
Gravity Rush, there you go. Like that, where suddenly you're walking on the wall sideways. It does that. And then once you're sideways, you have to carry on walking up the walls sideways until you reach a platform that either turns you the right way up or curves along, and so you can walk along a slope until you're suddenly facing the right way up. Each area is a self-contained maze in which you can twist and turn and get to the top, and then either you'll finish the level or a kind of walkway will appear. Stones will fly up from out of the water, or they'll materialise from the side of the screen, and you'll carry on to another bit, and you'll have a whole other puzzle section going on there. You also encounter occasional antagonists, so these crows pop up, and you can't get past them, so you need to find inventive ways of getting rid of them, getting them off the platforms, or ushering them into a doorway, or something like that. Is properly beautiful. It's all these kind of minimalist designs, lots of right angles, kind of pastel-esque colours on gradients as if they've been airbrushed. Really, really good looking. The soundtrack is this Zen puzzler, calm, you know, plinky sort of thing. And when you interact with the world, when you're moving platforms and lowering them up and down, you hear music that accompanies it. So as if you know, move a platform, guitar will go dun 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 dun, and it relates directly to how fast you're moving it. So little touches like that that make it really beautiful. It's not very long. There are only 10 levels. But those 10 levels, get longer and longer as the game goes on. But still, it won't take you too long to complete it, but it is a wonderful experience. If you like puzzle games in any way, shape or form, then you should really get into this. It has the atmosphere, the meditative atmosphere of games like Ico from the PlayStation 2.
Did you find that meditative?
Yeah. Well, Ico, totally.
Yeah.
I got stressed out with that game.
No, I mean, obviously, you've got this. You can get stressed out by puzzles in the same way as if you can't work out what to do here, you might, you know, rack your brains. But the whole air of the game was very, very kind of calm, and the environments are these washed out sort of colours, and they're all very beautiful, and it's got that kind of atmosphere around it, rather than dun 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 dun, which is, you know, that's what I mean. It's got this Zen puzzler chill aspect to it. But I absolutely loved it. It's my favourite thing from this week, and I'm really glad it's as good in motion as it looked like from the trailers and from the pictures. So Monument Valley, I think, again, £2.49 and $3.99, but if you're in any way interested in puzzlers, that's my recommendation for the week. Get to it. So Keith, what have you been playing?
There was a game that hit the top of the free apps on iTunes, which made a bit of noise around the world because it was called Flappy Bird. The new season. Like it which, was a series of Friends or something.
Yeah, which people thought was actually Flappy Bird, the reverse.
Well, yeah, that and Apple, I don't know, let this thing go on. What was interesting about it was that it was promoted by a fake Twitter account which attempted to mimic the real guy, Dong. It wasn't in any way new anyway. It was a literal and very accurate, actually, virtually identical reskin and reuse of the original code. So it was essentially Flappy Bird, which obviously, if people didn't have that on their device, they wouldn't be able to get hold of. So it's perhaps understandable why it was able to do so well. Even considering the sheer amount of Flappy Bird's clones that already exist, it still managed to get to the top. But it's quite interesting that today I woke up and it had been updated, as iOS now does, without telling you. And it's now called Snappy Bird. And it's got a different icon, and actually it looks different as well. So obviously someone at Apple, you would assume, has been in touch and said, yeah, that's not on.
Yeah, someone waved from their legal department.
Also, annoyingly, in between, the thing that really kills it, actually, is that since that update as well, it has video ads that play in between each go.
Every go.
Now, you could skip them after 5 seconds, but if you think about it, most play sessions on Flappy Bird don't last 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was curious because, I mean, the other thing I kind of briefly played this week, actually, was Mr. Flap, which was getting a bit of attention on Twitter because it's a similar idea, albeit presented in a much nicer way, of you tapping the screen to keep a bird in the air as he flies around in a circle. And you have to get him through holes, and you don't score any points until he's got around the entire lap. And it's very minimalist. It's, us two would like this, actually. It's it's very chic, and but it's essentially a similar idea, only much harder.
I can hear it squeaking in the background.
He squeaks when he dies, because the view doesn't move, so you're looking, as he goes round, you're then looking at him upside down, it's very hard. I haven't done a lap yet. But I thought that was interesting in that that was doing well. It wasn't at the top, but it was doing well, and it had taken the idea, one presumes, slightly jigged it, certainly changed it aesthetically. Still a bird, but I suppose birds are the thing you think of when you think about flying.
True. Or the App Store in general, actually. Angry Birds and everything.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was interesting. But yeah, so yesterday was the day of Flappy Bird the New Season, which wasn't Flappy Bird the New Season at all.
I bet you were heartbroken.
Well, yeah, so I've downloaded a fair few of these Flappy Bird clones. There are quite a few on Windows Phone, which I downloaded, that claim to be Flappy Bird 2. And but, exactly the same.
None of them filling the hole in your heart.
Well, I've still got the original on rubbish at it. So,
okay.
I'm all about threes now, and I'm still useless at that. So,
so you have to download 1048 and 2048 and all the other...
No, the only threes clone I've got is Slide 5,
okay,
which I'm better at.
That's how most of the clones work, apparently. Like 2048, you can just get scores of thousands in minutes on your first go, so it makes you feel smarter, whereas threes is actually challenging.
Freeze is very harsh.
Cracking too, good stuff. All right then, clones are plenty for you, but the other things you should get, yes, Fez, Monument Valley, definitely Monument Valley, have a look, FTL, all that, quite a good week, so go get them. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We will catch you next week for more of the same. Take it easy, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.